Well, hello. This is Bob Sutherland from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from a number of sources, Reuters, Triangle Business Journal, the Wall Street Journal, the business section, what's left of it with the News and Observer. And today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. And I might let you tell you that the previously known Triangle Radio Reading Service now is known as the North Carolina Reading Service. Well, the Triangle Town Center is headed for foreclosure sale later this month. You, of course, know that's out on Capitol Boulevard, or used to call it Downtown Boulevard. The run of hard luck for shopping malls in the Triangle continues, with North Raleigh's Triangle Town Center heading for foreclosure sale later this month. The mall, which is managed and partly owned by CB&L Associates, will have a foreclosure sale on July 11. That's according to a public notice. CB&L and Associates, which recently sold the Cary Town Center for $31.5 million, owns the mall with New York-based DRA Advertisers. In 2016, DRA and CB&L bought the mall for $174 million, with DRA Advisors becoming the new majority owner of the mall, with a 90% stake in the remaining 10% owned by CB&L, the News and Observer reported. That purchase price included the assumption of $171 million in debt, which has evidently become too much for the group to pay off. When DRA and CB&L bought the mall, the group restructured the loan, moving its maturity date from December of 16 to December of 18. When the loan came due last year, the group defaulted on it. That's according to real estate data tracker TREP. Well, earlier this year from Durham, Amazon said it would spend $800 million during the second quarter to reduce its Prime shipping time for Prime customers from 2 days to one. At a nondescript building off Holloway Street in East Durham, the effort to make those deliveries faster is well underway. With both Amazon-branded and plain Mercedes-Benz Sprinter vans darting out of the parking lot every few minutes Tuesday, Amazon gave reporters a tour of its first facility, of its first delivery station in Durham. According to an expansive warehouse, the workers receiving neon vests darted back and forth down long rows of shelving and conveyor belts, passing along brown Amazon boxes. At an open bay at the far end of the warehouse, a revolving group of 4 to 5 vans waited for the boxes to make it their way before speeding away. The facility, which has been operating since the end of last year, handles last-mile logistics for the e-commerce giant and ships 10,000 packages every day. That's according to James Shively, a regional director of operations for Amazon. Well, the Dow Jones was up 70 points almost, 69.25 to be exact, to close at 26,786. And the S&P was up 8.68 to close at 29.7301. That's the end of business on Tuesday, July the 2nd. Well, from Washington and the Associated Press, as it enters its 11th year, America's economic expansion is now the longest on record, a streak that has shrunk unemployment, swelled household wealth, revived the housing market, and helped fuel an explosive rise in the stock market. Yet even after a full decade of uninterrupted economic growth, the richest Americans now hold a greater share of the nation's wealth than they actually did before the Great Recession began in 07. And income growth has been sluggish by historical standards, leaving many Americans feeling stuck in place. Those trends help explain something unique about this expansion. It's easily the least celebrated economic recovery in decades. As public discontent has grown, the issue has become one for political candidates to harness, beginning with Donald Trump in 16. Now some of the Democrats running to challenge Trump for the presidency have built their campaigns around proposals to tax wealth, raise minimum wages, and ease the financial strain of medical care and higher education. America's financial disparities have widened in large part because the means by which people build wealth have become more exclusive since the Great Recession. Fewer middle-class Americans own homes, fewer are invested in the stock market, and home prices have risen far more in wealthier metro areas on the coast than in more modestly priced cities and rural areas. The result is that affluent homeowners now sit on vast sums of home equity and capital gains, while tens of millions of ordinary households have been left mainly on the sidelines. And that's from the Associated Press. Well, outside a renovated warehouse in South End, Charlotte, that dates back to the 1900s, the smell of sugary baked goods wafts through the air. A worker in a white lab coat walks out of a door labeled Kitchen Lab, where hundreds of piping hot glazed donuts make their way down an assembly line. Over the last several months, Krispy Kreme has quietly opened its new corporate offices and test kitchen space in Charlotte. By the end of the year, the Winston-Salem-based donut maker will open a 4,500-square-foot retail shop toward the front of its building where customers can test limited-edition donuts and offer feedback on what kind of recipes the bakery chain should next try. The facility at 2116 Hawkins Street near Sycamore Brewing houses Krispy Kreme's Global Product and Innovation Center. The office is where Krispy Kreme has relocated its marketing, development, human resources, finance, and operations teams. The facility houses about 80 employees with space for up to 120. And while we own Krispy Kreme, they do that donuts will now show up at your doorstep. What's next? A hot now neon sign in your kitchen window? Krispy Kreme, the world famous donut known for its silky sugar glaze over perfect rings of fried dough, is rolling out its delivery, starting with 20 locations in North Carolina. The donut giant has offered delivery for months, but this week added delivery via its mobile app. When Krispy Kreme started delivering its donuts in October, orders could only be placed on the website. Five Triangle locations offer mobile delivery, including the flagship Person Street store, plus Durham, Wake Forest, Knightdale, and Fuquay Varina. Well, the Fed left its key interest rate unchanged Wednesday, but signaled it's prepared to start cutting rates if needed to protect the United States economy from trade conflicts and other threats. The Fed kept its benchmark rate, which influences many consumer and business loans, in a range of 2.25% to 2.5%, where it's been since December. It issued a statement saying that because uncertainties have increased, it would act as appropriate to sustain the expansion. That language echoed a remark that Chairman Jerome Powell made 2 weeks ago that analysts interpreted as a signal that rate cuts were on the way. In its statement Wednesday, the Fed removed a reference to being patient about adjusting rates. That suggested the central bank is now inclined to begin cutting rates for the first time in more than a decade. Now, it remains unclear when that might happen. The Fed's decision was approved on a 9-1 vote, with James Bullard, president of the Fed St. Louis Regional Bank, dissenting because he thought the central bank should begin cutting rates now. It marked the first dissent from a Fed decision since Powell became chairman in February of last year. The policymakers are considering cutting rates in part because President Donald Trump's trade conflicts, especially with China, have become a threat to the economy. The economic expansion that has followed the Great Recession next month will become the longest on record. Well, China says U.S.-China trade teams are in touch ahead of the G20. Chinese and U.S. trade negotiators are discussing ways to resolve disputes ahead of a meeting between President Trump and Xi Jinping at the G20 summit in Japan later this week. That's according to a Chinese official. The sides were seeking to consolidate the important consensus reached between the two leaders in a telephone call last week. This week's G20 meeting in Osaka is the first chance Trump and Xi have had to thrash out the trade dispute face-to-face since Trump said he would target $300 billion in Chinese imports he has already hit with tariffs, extending them to everything China ships to the United States. Trump has already imposed 25% tariffs on $250 billion in Chinese imports, and China has retaliated with tariffs on the U.S. goods. Well, the Treasury Department, this is from the New York Times, Treasury Department's internal watchdog has agreed to look into why designs of a new $20 bill featuring Harriet Tubman will not be unveiled next year. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, the Democratic leader, last week asked the Treasury Department's Inspector General to open an investigation after Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin's announcement at a May congressional hearing that designs of the new $20 bill would be unveiled in 2026 instead of 2020. That's the 100th anniversary of women gaining the right to vote. Mnuchin at the hearing would not commit to Tubman being featured on the note, diverging from the plan and timeline by the Obama administration and leaving the decision to a future Treasury secretary. Treasury's Inspector General, in a letter to Schumer dated June 21, said that the review of the $20 bill will be included in an already planned audit of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing's process for designing new notes and security features. That audit will include interviews with senior officials from Treasury, the BEP, the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors, and the Secret Service. A formal investigation will be open if any indications of misconduct surrounding the delay emerge during the industry. Well, Senator Bernie Sanders, along with prominent House Democratic progressives, introduced legislation on Monday to eliminate all of the country's student debt while transforming the nation's higher education system, escalating the policy battle to win the support of the Democratic Party's left flank. The plan, which Sanders, the independent from Vermont, introduced with Representatives Ilhan Omar, Democrat from Minnesota, and Pramila Jayapal, a Democrat from Washington, would forgive the student debts of nearly 45 million graduates, worth about $1.6 trillion. That's in, T as in Tom, trillion. And eliminate tuition and fees at public four-year institutions and community colleges. It would cap student loan interest rates, expand the Pell grants by allowing them to cover books, housing, and transportation, and cancel tuition at trade schools and apprenticeship programs. It will also channel more funding to historically black universities, tribal colleges, and other minority institutions. To pay its estimated cost of $2.2 trillion, its authors would impose a Wall Street speculation tax that would impose a tax on financial investment transactions. Sanders said that all debt could be eliminated within 6 months under his plan. He goes on to say, "I don't often use the phrase, but today we are, in fact, offering a revolutionary proposal." He spoke to an event outside the Capitol to introduce legislation. He says, "Today we are entering a proposal which will allow every person in this country to get all of the education that they need to live out their dreams." Introduced 2 days before the first Democratic debate of 2020, the plan offers Sanders an opportunity to distinguish himself from Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, who has been jockeying with him for the support of the party's left flank. Warren released her own higher education plan in April. President Trump continued his assault on the Fed Monday, blaming the central bank for reining in the United States economy that is on track to reach its longest expansion in history. Trump, in a pair of his tweets, said the economy and stock market would have been even stronger had the Fed kept interest rates low rather than raising rates full time in 18. He goes on to say, "Now they stick like a stubborn child when we need rate cuts and easing to make up for what other countries are doing against us." "Blew it," Trump tweeted. The president's criticism of the Fed comes at an odd moment. As of July 1, the United States will have experienced the longest economic expansion on record, 10 years and running. The unemployment rate is at its lowest level in nearly 50 years, and inflation, though quiescent, has at least gotten close to the central bank's 2% goal. By lifting rates from near zero and shrinking the massive volume of government-backed bonds on its balance sheet, the central bank has bought itself precious space to fight the next economic downturn when it comes. The Fed has already signaled that it is prepared to cut rates at its next meeting, and the federal chairman will take steps to sustain the economic expansion. Well, a casino juggernaut was informed Monday when Eldorado Resorts announced it is buying Caesars in a cash-and-stock deal valued at $17.3 billion. The acquisition will put about 60 casino resorts in 16 states under a single name, Caesars, creating the largest gambling operator in the United States. The deal, following pressure from activist investor Carl Icahn, is targeted to close in the first half of 2020 if approved by gambling regulators and shareholders. It would open the doors of the Las Vegas Strip market to El Dorado. Well, the Supreme Court is rejecting an early challenge to President Trump's authority to impose tariffs on imported steel based on national security concerns. The justices did not comment on Monday in leaving in place a decision by the Court of International Trade that ruled against steel importers and other users of imported steel who challenged the 25% tariff on steel that Trump imposed in 18. The importers argue that Trump does not have unbounded authority under the Constitution to regulate trade. They say that job belongs to Congress. The legal challenge is at an early stage before a federal appeals court has weighed in. The case could return to the Supreme Court later. Well, locally, developers, if they develop the stadium in Southeast Raleigh, they would need public money. North Carolina Football Club owner Steve Malik and Raleigh developer John Kane revealed their vision Tuesday for a massive sports stadium project south of downtown, drawing up plans for a 20,000-seat stadium surrounded by nearly $2 billion worth of private development. Now, the project, which Malik and Kane are dubbing Downtown South, would radically change the southern entrance to downtown Raleigh, creating a new cluster of high-rises right off Interstate 40 in an area that is currently dominated by empty fields and small businesses. Malik and Kane held a press conference Tuesday to talk about and try to drum up public support for the project, which they said will need public money to kickstart. In addition to the stadium, which would be placed on 55 acres off South Saunders Street, Kane and Malik hope to build 1.6 million square feet of office space, 1,200 hotel rooms, 1,750 apartments, 125,000 square feet of retail and restaurant space. Previously, Malik has described the proposed development as another North Hills. Referencing the successful office, retail, and residential area Kane Realty has built north of downtown. In fact, that amount of office space would be greater than what North Hills currently has, according to Kane. Renderings of the project, which were done by architectural firm Gensler, show several high-rise towers lined against South Saunders Street and around the stadium. Orders to U.S. factories for long-lasting manufactured goods fell 1.3% in May. That's according to the Commerce Department. That weakness reflected a sharp fall-off in orders for commercial aircraft. The category that serves as a proxy for business investment edged up 0.4% in May. Economists have been worried about a slowdown in business investment orders, believing it shows business concerns about rising trade tensions. The report on durable goods showed that excluding the volatile transportation categories, orders would have risen a small 0.3% in May. Well, the government is investigating price-fixing charges against the country's biggest poultry companies. The Department of Justice tipped its hand last week when it requested a temporary halt to discovery proceedings in 2016 class action lawsuit filed by food service distributor Maple Vale Farms. A federal judge is scheduled to rule on the request Thursday. Falconer, a New York-based Maple Vale Farms, accuses Tyson Foods, Purdue Foods, Pilgrim's Pride, and others of conspiring to fix poultry prices between 08 and 16. Well, Mitsubishi Motors announced on Tuesday that it is relocating its North American headquarters from California to Tennessee. That's a move that will bring the Japanese automaker closer to the sister company Nissan and strengthen Tennessee's growing reputation as an epicenter of the automotive sector. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee and Department of Economic and Community Development Commissioner Bob Rolfe, who made the announcement with Mitsubishi, say the headquarters move from Cypress, California to Franklin, Tennessee, will result in an $18.25 million investment in the region and approximately 200 jobs. Lee and Rolfe added that they met with Mitsubishi's global executives last week to convince him to move to Tennessee while in Japan during the Republican governor's first trade mission. It is unclear what financial incentives state officials offered Mitsubishi to move to Tennessee. As we drive toward the future, this is a perfect time for us to move to a new home while we say farewell to Golden State with a heavy heart. We're excited to say hello to Music City, said Fred Diaz, Mitsubishi Motors North America's president and CEO. Well, earlier this year, the owners of Raleigh's Crabtree Valley Mall said they were beginning to plot a new future for one of the area's most popular malls, charting a path that would make it less dependent on retail. It was a move that nearly every traditional shopping mall in the region was also contemplating as they started shedding big box retailers that struggled to compete in a changing shopping landscape. On Tuesday, the 47-year-old mall revealed new details of that plan, saying it planned to ask the city to rezone a portion of its land for a 30-story tower to bring office space and a hotel to its property. That rezoning would be targeted for a portion of the mall that was once home to Sears, but is now an empty shell. Sears has owned the 168,000-square-foot building there, as well as the 3.3 acres around it. But as the company's struggles intensified, the mall decided to take back control of the property for nearly $20 million in 2018. If you look back at the Sears situation and look at their struggles, we wanted to gain control of the property, said Brian Asbill, director of marketing for Crabtree. They owned it, but we thought taking that leap of faith and taking control was important because it really gives us a blank slate for what comes next for Crabtree. Well, the Durham County Commissioners unanimously approved a nearly $625 million budget Monday night that raises the county property tax rate nearly 3.4%. The new tax rate for the fiscal year beginning July 1 will increase from 68.9 cents to 71.2 cents per $100 of assessed property valuation. The owner of a $300,000 home will pay $2,136 in county taxes, a $69 increase. Property owners in the city of Durham also pay a city property tax. The city's new property tax rate is $53.17 per hundred of assessed property value, a similar 3.3% increase. We had many tough choices to make as there are many great and justified funding needs in our community, said County Board Chairman Wendy Jacobs. After the budget was passed, we have to make decisions that leverage strategic use of our limited public resources in our efforts to ensure that all people are thriving in our community. Well, a freeze on new wind turbines the Senate approved for wide swaths of the state is gone from a new proposal regulating wind turbines. House and Senate negotiators removed the moratorium the Senate approved in Senate Bill 377 and added an addition to the state permitting act process by requiring the state to ask for more information from military commanders. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Reading Service, that is now the North Carolina Reading Service, and today's reading of the Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Thank you.